Attention, people of Earth, do not resist us. All who oppose us shall be annihilated. We command the most powerful army of monsters in the universe. They are sure to defeat your Earth monsters. All those who are hearing this are now under the control of the Earth Destruction Directive.
Hey, you! Yes, you, hearing this message. Do you like podcasts? Well, evidently you do, because you're listening to one right now. Do you like giant monsters? Of course you do! Who doesn't like giant monsters? Well, then have I got the show for you. Earth Destruction Directive is the newest Daikaiju podcast on the internet. And we talk about all your old favorites, like Godzilla, Rodan, King Ghidorah, and Gamera. But also lesser-known monsters, like Gappa, Yongari, and Giyawa. We cover everything from movies to comic books to video games, and we're kicking it old school.
This is breaking news. We are receiving word that Earth Destruction Directive is now a part of the Two True Freaks podcast network. Listeners are advised to stay in their homes and listen to all of the fine quality podcasts on the Two True Freaks podcast network, available at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. We now return you to your regularly scheduled broadcast. Wait a minute. Is this true? Earth Destruction Directive is now on the Two True Freaks Network? You bet your oxygen destroyer it is. So if you love atomic-powered, fire-breathing, hardcore, giant monster action, then head on over to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com and check out Earth Destruction Directive. We're turning all of your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
It's Christmas time again, suckers, and that's where me, Maury Clawhammer, comes in. I'm here to show you how you can get brownie points with the family and friends and ensure that you have quality podcasts to listen to when you're supposed to be working. So fellas, what you do is you go to the twotruefreaks.libsyn.com, spelled L-I-B-S-Y-N, and then you shop through the Two True Freaks Amazon link. That way you get presents for your old lady and kids, and the freaks get a little cut at no freaking cost to you. You get the stuff you want and ensure that fine Demonzicorp podcasts like this one don't have to steal from peaceful citizens just to put food in their yaps. Got it? And ladies. Oh, come on, let's face it. There's no ladies listening to this sausage fest. And while you're at it, why don't you buy a t-shirt? They're made out of cotton, not dog crap. Jeez, whatever. Merry Christmas.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, gore gluttons. They say in space no one can hear you scream. Well, apparently on Mars they can actually hear you scream and see you bleed. Yes, it's John Carpenter's only off-world movie, Ghosts of Mars. You know how you think of Martians as little green men with antenna flying around in their UFOs, and ghosts as sort of semi-transparent men with sheets thrown over their head? Well, you can throw that all out the window. Apparently, your average Martian ghost looks like the band The Misfits, or a high school student hanging out at Hot Topic. Anyway, I think these ghosts kind of have issues because, well, I think they've been cutting themselves. Oh well, enjoy the movie. Heads will roll.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I'm Chris Honeywell and I'm here once again with my two co-hosts, Luke Giaconetti and the Hair Metal Hero.
Hey everybody,
have fun. And we like to talk over each other.
Well, you know, you'll notice he does that every time. He introduces us together with no break.
Yeah. Follow you right up. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I'm actually trying to do, it's like drill sergeant style. I'm trying to get you guys to plot against me and work on stuff behind my back so you can go, God damn it, next time that bastard pulls that shit, we'll be ready for him.
Yeah, but then it will just turn into the 80s podcast with Chris and Luke.
And then the one time you guys have something planned out, that's when I'll actually, like, introduce you guys correctly. At least I'm pronouncing everybody's name right now, right? That's a step in the right direction.
Yep.
Well, this is so difficult.
It's all baby steps with me. That's what you guys gotta learn, you know? It's just, you know, take those little tiny victories, you know, when you can.
Yes.
Well, this month we're still on, you know, we actually, like, went through all of November without getting a show out, although we did.
Yeah, yep. But we gave him three in October.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
So I didn't feel so bad about this, but we got a fresh new one right here in for December, and this time it's Ghosts of Mars, another one of the sort of minor John Carpenter film, another '90s John Carpenter film.
From actually no, not 2000.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So far this is the latest one we've watched on here. So
that's his last theatrical. It's before The Ward.
Before The Ward, which was just this year. So wow, yeah, that's quite a break. It seems it's very much like his '90s movies. I'll say that.
Yes.
It's right in line with those films for sure.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I think we paired this up, so to speak, with Vampires, was that stylistically, you know, being made only 3 years apart, there's a lot of similarities between these two films, right down to there's K&B handled the special effects for both films, which they were the standard go-to house for a lot of genre movies in the late 90s, early 2000s, and their work's obviously on display quite a bit in this film.
Yeah, definitely he might have had a bit of a smaller budget than Vampires, quite a bit of a smaller budget, but yeah, when the special effects, there's a lot of them that are sort of soundstage special effects, but when a real effect has to happen, it's really good. When the gore happens in this, there's some really good gore in this one.
Yeah, there is.
Is this the first Carpenter film we've watched with a decapitation?
I think so. On-screen decapitation, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a good one.
I mean, there's many decapitations in this movie, but yeah, there's one just very beautiful one on screen. Right, and it's, you know, following up an arm getting hacked off too, off the same person. So that, yeah, both those shots. The arm coming off was really nice. Man, I can't believe because I saw this when it came out. So that was quite a while. So that was a decade ago when I watched this.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that long ago. I keep thinking of it as a recent Carpenter movie. So I only think of it as like a few years ago, but it's been a decade.
And you know what's funny going to that is if you look at this cast, you could have told me this movie was made last year with this cast.
Yeah, pretty much.
Natasha Henstridge, Jason Statham, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, that's, you know, I could see them making a sci-fi movie right now, you know. It's, you know, just that's, you know, that with it's a combination of the staying power of people like Ice Cube and Natasha Henstridge, and the fact that he caught Jason Statham, you know, before the transport.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah,
yeah,
right in. And it's funny because with his Australian accent, I've been catching up with my Star Wars Clone Wars, and he sounds like all the clone troopers in Clone Wars. And when he's, you know, when he's saying something like, "I'm gonna need some help down here," you know, "things are going to hell down here," it's like totally listen to a Clone Wars episode. But Yeah, I love the cast. I'm a big Pam Grier fan, so it's always good to see Pam Grier, and to even see Pam Grier. This might be the first time we've seen Pam Grier decapitated.
I don't think that happened in Foxy Brown.
No.
Oh, I forgot about that. I thought I remember seeing this and thinking, being kind of my first impression of it was my only impression of it was kind of meh, but not bad. And I enjoyed it, but I remember her hanging around a lot longer than she actually did in this story. But I enjoyed it a lot more the second time.
Yeah. See, the first time I saw this, I was on vacation and I watched it with my brother, who's also a gore hound. And we liked it a lot, but I never actually ended up buying it, so I don't think I've seen it since I watched it the first time in 2001 or 2002. So it was great fun just to watch it again, and I enjoyed it very much this time through. Part of it now is watching it on the heels of watching, Assault on Precinct 13 and Escape from L.A. Now all the stylistic things are starting to become that much more evident.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm looking right at my notes and I've got Escape from New York plus The Thing plus Assault on Precinct 13 as a sort of equation for this movie. Plus there's other stuff from other people's movies, but those are like the strongest from his movies thrown in there. I mean, basically if you combine the woman in Ice Cube in here, you got Snake Plissken. Between the two of them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the scene where Statham takes her into the back to go have sex, to, to lure her into the back, and he's like, see this room here? And he opens up the door, and he's like, and then we got an exit back here. That's right out of Assault on Precinct 13. The set even looks the same. And I was watching that going, are they going to set, we can make our stand here, and we could escape through, this little door if we have to. And I was thinking, is he paying tribute to himself? And then it turned into, a little switcheroo where he was soliciting her for sex. But
yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of classic Carpenter. The hallway shootout, when the ghosts finally overtake the defenses, and it's just two of them will shoot and then they'll reload while the other two shoot, and they're just backing up and they're throwing, the Molotov cocktails, and they're just making them come through each door and each wall. It's like, that is, in a lot of ways, kind of the stereotypical John Carpenter shot, almost. Beyond prototypical John Carpenter, now we're at... It's just like, yeah, we've got to have a scene where they're fighting down the hallway like that, fighting in a fallback action against an army that just keeps coming. You expect something like that, but it's still done really well, so you don't mind that it's in there again.
Yeah, it's almost like John Carpenter every once in a while likes to do a movie where he just figures out some sort of excuse to have that army, approaching people.
Oh, yeah, well, he said in interviews he'd be content if he just remade Rio Bravo for the rest of his life.
At this point, shouldn't he just make an actual Western instead of setting it in space or modern day? Just set it in the old West.
I mean, I guess he's thinking, people. I'm John Carpenter, the horror master, so people expect horror from me. But you can these days you can get away with breaking from it would be maybe a really good little piece of publicity for him to say, hey, John Carpenter is taking a break from horror and he's doing a Western, or he could do a horror Western, actually. But if he just did a straight up Western, that gives the asshole reviewers an opportunity to actually admit that he's a good director if he does a good job with it. Because
if you make a good Western nowadays, now you can win an Oscar.
Exactly. Then they can say, hey, well, this guy's been a pulpy horror director all the time, but he's proved his chops as a, now that we see him working in the classic genre of Western, which they seem to have forgot started off as a pulpy, trashy, genre. But now it's a respectable genre for the most part, or...
When someone
makes a trashy Western now, it's treated like as the exception, right? Rather than the rule.
Now it's kitsch.
Right.
But You can see it too. You can just envision the epic looking Western trailer with Kurt Russell in it, and then just halfway through the white text on a black screen, a film by John Carpenter, the whole place go no.
A Western with Kurt Russell by John Carpenter is that's just too much of a tease to even think about.
That's. Oh man, I have like a huge boner right now thinking about that.
Yeah, that's all the ingredients for Gigundus movie boner.
Because you know, if he was going to do Rio Bravo as a Western in his own style, it'd be them fighting like a horde of like Native American mm-hmm. zombies.
Yep.
Oh, that'd be so rad.
Great.
But
let's see. I learned. An important thing. I learned the Martian language in this movie. You want to hear something? Give me something to translate into Martian. Anything, man. I can do anything at this point.
Have a lovely evening.
That is scintillating.
That's Martian. Ooh. I love it. The guy they just had the guy just scream in pure. I mean, it's just pure gibberish. I love it.
Yeah. Not only is it authentic frontier gibberish.
Well, you know, in Star Wars, they actually get Ben Burtt to go and study some, you know, indigenous tribe and their language patterns, and the Ewoks. You know, you could actually script out what they're saying and.
Yeah, I mean, or James Doohan, you know, he full languages, or, you know, sometimes you don't got time to do that. Sometimes you just go, you know, go together and yell.
This one, they took the guy and they said, they made him watch, you know, Mel Gibson giving speeches in Braveheart and said, all right, do that, but just do it with blah, 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 blah.
Oh, man. I have a great anecdote about that. Do you guys remember the film Earth Girls Are Easy?
Yes.
Yes.
And you remember the other, it was Jeff Goldblum was the head alien, but the other two were Damon Wayans and Jim Carrey.
Yep.
And apparently working on that set was for the director a mm-hmm. nightmare. For the cast was hilarious because they were talking in gibberish when they'd be talking as aliens. And then every now and again, Carrey would just go, wait, no, I said that wrong.
Yeah. Meanwhile, every second of film that's shot is like $10,000 on a movie on a Hollywood movie set.
Even on Earth, Girls Are Easy. But you know what? That was odd about Ghosts of Mars is that the soundtrack is standard Carpenter, but almost as if it's a sign of the times. Parts of it get very electronic.
Yes.
You know, even electronic than normal. Like they're almost trying to sound like electronica. More so than like his normal sign of kind of synthesizer sound, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely the bass is pumped up, and the drum machine aspect of it is pumped up, and more of a they don't flat out use like breakbeat beats, but yeah, it's given that a more thumping driving, which I mean lends itself very well to John Carpenter's soundtrack style.
Yes. There is a reason that some of that might be easy to see. The guitarist from Nine Inch Nails is one of the guitarists, and Buckethead is also on the soundtrack.
Really? I love me some Buckethead.
Because Anthrax is in there as well too.
Yeah.
And you see, you definitely get that sort of influence on the. Actually, I think when this happened in this movie, it was probably still novel. When they're having the big fight scene outside, when they're fighting to get back in, it's in the big mauling fight scene with the heavy metal soundtrack, and that would become almost a cliche in the 2000s.
Yes, it did.
You know,
you're right.
No matter what kind of score you had for your film, if it was an action movie with a relatively young demographic, throw some kind of thrash metal in there when they're fighting everybody. And here it's used to real good effect because, you know, that's when the gore starts really getting pumped up. You know, it's anytime you've got an enemy that can throw saw blades,
yes.
You know, bad stuff is on the horizon. So I really like that. I thought that was neat because I had forgotten entirely about that. And when it cuts on, it's like, It's like, yeah, it's good to see something like that in there because it, at this point, like I said, it was still original. And it's well done, too. That always helps.
I notice a lot. He does a lot of shot when the saw blades start getting whipped out and thrown at the protagonists. They seem like weird shots because the saw blades weren't hitting people's legs. But he did a lot of shots where they'd start throwing the saw blades and then you'd see the heroes running away. But you'd see them sort of from the knees down in a medium shot and sort of tracking them. And I'm like, that's a really weird shot. But then I'm like, no, that totally plays on, like, the fear of... If I was running away of getting hit with one of those blades, I guess if I was running away, I wouldn't want to get hit, like, get my hamstring or the back of my knee cut with... That's what I would be the most afraid of with those things. Yeah. Not really getting decapitated, because that's over fast, and... Like your chest and arms and stuff, you can sort of deflect and take stuff, but you don't want your legs taken out. It will keep you from running. And he was just subtly playing on that fear, and it was something you didn't really, you know, it took me like watching it a couple times to be like, why is he doing that? To sort of think of that. There's a lot of weird editing. There's a lot of linear dissolves where he'll dissolve forward 2 seconds in time. You know, just people walking through a doorway, and then he'll crossfade, and they'll just be like 2 feet ahead of where they were, 5 feet ahead of where they were, you know, just this weird sort of thing. And he did it once, and I thought, well, maybe he had a bad take, you know, where somebody tripped or he didn't like something, so he crossfaded it to sort of cut that part out. But it kept going, and I think that was to work the stories within stories. Because sometimes you got, like, flashbacks within flashbacks within flashbacks going on in this movie. The whole movie's a flashback.
It's really got a unique sort of narrative structure. I don't think we've seen any film as disjointed timeline-wise as this during this series.
Yeah.
It's been all kind of all over the place.
Yeah, well, you've got people in the flashback giving their backstory in flashback. I love the doctor's story. I forgot all the little just neat touches in it. Like the doctor who had escaped her first, you know, encounter with these people in a giant solar, like, weather balloon. And just sort of, you know, flew into the other base. Sort of with the wind behind her, so she probably had the Martians blowing behind her. This was one thing I was thinking. They should have... Why at any point did they say, you know, we can't really kill these guys. We probably shouldn't kill them. We should probably let them stay in their warrior bodies and figure out some way to contain them and just keep them in there. Because otherwise, they're more dangerous when they're dead, when they're floating around spirits, you know, because they seem to be able to just jump at will into whoever's near... Or downwind from them. And another thing is, if you were this one scene was one of the scenes that kind of annoyed me was, if you're a spirit and you're just floating around, why don't you possess the person with the gun? Why do you go and possess the old guy who's in the cell? You know, that's just kind of.
Best not to ask those questions.
I guess not. Maybe, you know, I think the Martians just didn't care, you know? They're just like, screw it! I want to be the old guy in the cell. I'll just sit here and scrape my face off in front of him just to freak him out, you know. Because, you know, what's the worst? That's the great thing about the Martians is, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen to him is he can kill him, and that just sort of sets him free to find a new body to cause chaos in. So they're a neat foe. They're a neat idea for a bad guy.
Yeah, because, you know, what are you going to do with them? Even if you kill them, you're still fighting them, sort of thing. And it sort of takes the NOLA one step further, you know? Because in Assault on Precinct 13, there were just wave after wave of these guys, you know? Here, they're, you know, they're, even if there is wave after wave, and if you do manage to kill one, you still haven't gotten rid of him.
Yeah. And another interesting thing about this, we have a space matriarchy going on here, it seems mm-hmm. like. You don't really tell, you don't really know exactly what's going on, but it's, and my favorite is the one character who said, yeah, well, you got the guns, you got the power of the woman behind you. So now the man has become the woman in the future. That's hilarious.
That's, see, I think that's my biggest gripe with this movie, is that whole aspect of it is just sort of there. It's, there's like, they need to get more into that. It's just such, it's almost throwaway.
It is throwaway, but there was serious talk about long-term space travel and like zero gravity and stuff like that. And a lot of the general agreement was that women were going to be a lot more suited to long-term space travel, you know, zero
bullshit.
G and all that.
I would really feel that, Hero.
I'll find you the reports, Hero. I actually read a NASA report. This was back in the 70s, maybe like around 80. But, it was almost pornographic where they were trying to figure out, it was because they were trying to figure out, you know, all right, we're going to have people exploring space and maybe they might have to be out there for years and years and years. So we're going to have, you know, a co-ed crew. So, cause people are going to want to have sex. They're not going to, you know, they're going to want to be normal people. But then they were trying to figure out how you could have sex in zero G. But that's it sounded great, but like standard thrusty male and on female sex wouldn't work out in zero G because you'd go careening off the walls and stuff. So they were figuring, lesbian women might be better suited because they could actually have sex without like beating the hell out of each other, or some sort of, you know, expensive. Seriously, they were thinking of this stuff. So that's where I think John Carpenter got his idea. He probably read that somewhere and said, that's a great idea. I want a space matriarchy. And then just whipped it in here for the hell of it. And it gives you a good chance for Pam Grier to hit on the main character, too, you know.
That's okay.
Yeah. We're all cool with that.
Well, I mean, it's Natasha Henstridge. She just come off of doing Species where she was, like, naked for half the movie.
Yeah.
My favorite credit ever for Natasha Henstridge was when she was she played the lesbian substitute teacher on South Park.
Oh, yeah.
She was actually credited as guest starring that chick from Species. That was her on-screen credit. My wife watches the show Drop Dead Diva, and she's a occasional show on a guest on that show. And I say it every time, "Hey, it's the chick from Species." You know, she doesn't appreciate it, but I say it anyway. Jerks.
Now, if the chick from Drop Dead Diva hit on the chick from Species, I'd watch that. Now I'm really outing myself here, aren't I?
Nope.
No, I think we've pretty much been able to work all those into your profile. We've been building over the years, so.
Yeah. I'm right with you. What's also in this is we continue the trend of awesomely named male leads.
Ridiculously,
Desolation Williams. That's the greatest name ever.
Yes, he's named after a noun. Oh, actually, a feeling.
Yeah, it used to be just like mean animals and stuff, and now it's just getting more and more distilled. Until we're gonna have like Badass Jones or something like that in one of the new movies, you know.
Badass Jones.
Ass Kick Jones or something like that.
I'm in a red movie with Badass Jones.
That's a pimp
movie.
That
sounds pretty cool.
That's a pimp versus the man movie.
Yeah.
Badass Jones.
It'd be better if it was a pimp versus ninjas,
pimp
though.
Pimp versus ninjas. I can't.
Badass Jones and the ninjas are trying to take his hoes.
And turn them into ninja hoes.
Ooh, yeah, ninja hoes.
The video game that would go along with it would be probably more lucrative than the movie itself.
Yes.
No, but yeah, you know that. I like Ice Cube as a general rule. I think he does. He's got range. I think he can do comedy. He can do action. And I think this was a good role for him. I'm a little disappointed that we never got the obvious sequel that's set up at the end.
Yeah.
which would be, you know, Ice Cube and the chick from Species, you know, go mowing down Space Zombies Part 2, you know, but I like his bit in this. He's definitely in the same mold as, and I'm going to forget the character's name from Assault on Precinct 13, as I
feel. Napoleon.
Napoleon, yeah, he's definitely in that kind of mold, but he digs it in a sort of a 90s sort of, you know, gangsta spin on it, which is totally appropriate considering the time frame that the film was made and the actor playing it. So I liked Ice Cube in this. I thought he was good. I'm a little surprised that he's never done anything else with Carpenter, because he tends to work with the same
people.
Yeah,
well, it had his, that guy Peter Jason was in it, of course, you know, the train driver. He's in almost all the movies, you know. The sort of Charles Durning looking guy.
Yeah.
Always a favorite. I love Ice Cube's three buddies, you know, his henchmen that show up.
Yeah.
And
that's his own finger up.
Oh, that's, yeah. Well, I mean, the scene before that where they're in the cell and, you know, they go in and they're like, we're breaking out our friend. And as soon as they walk in, they just lock him in the cell and they're all, and they all just like look at each other and go, fuck. That was a beautiful scene. That was just a very well acted scene. And there were a few moments in this movie where I noticed, like, the dialogue was, there was some Carpenter dialogue, you know, that sort of dialogue of badass talking to badass and assessing the situation and getting stuff done, you know, the opposite of like having the stupid person who's freaking out and stuff like that. But I noticed some of the actors didn't deliver them, and maybe it's more of the style of the 90s and now, but a lot of times they would say stuff sort of as a question that may have been more like a statement in another Carpenter movie. You know what I mean? I should have written it down, like the lines down exactly, but it was just a subtle thing where I could see the line of dialogue in the script and see that Carpenter may have probably intended on having it be more like a little more badass.
Yeah,
but
that would be a note too.
I'm
gonna talk. Can you read that last part back? A little more badass, please.
And I like the whole thing of where you've got your Ice Cube he's a flawed hero like Carpenter's other flawed heroes, whereas he's sort of like, you know, he's a thief or, you know, a bad guy. But I like that the woman is a drug addict. That was an interesting little and it ends up actually saving her ass later on in the movie, which is, I thought, you know, usually it's something like that. I was like, oh, geez, that's the character's fatal flaw. You know, that's what's going to, you know, she's going to be...
Not in a Carpenter movie.
Yeah, not in a Carpenter movie. No, it was her psychedelic drugs that drove, that made the aliens go, you know, fuck this vessel. I'm going to find another vessel. I'm done here.
Plus, she already had the John Carpenter plot armor of being a strong woman, so...
But I love that sequence where they put her outside and, you know, the guy's like, well, we'll give her... I don't know why he knows that giving her her drugs will somehow help, or if he just does it as a gesture of, you know, well, we're leaving her out to die or, you know, become possessed by this. We might as well fuck with him first. But I love the sequence of... I like that earlier on in the movie he established... You know, sort of what it was like to take this drug. You know, it was like water washing over you. And then when she took it under the influence of the aliens, you saw it through an alien point of view. So you saw sort of like the dust of Mars instead of the ocean and all that stuff. And then it's slowly transitioned back into the water to tell you that she had driven, you know, the alien presence out. And I thought that worked really well.
Yeah, someone who doesn't do drugs, that's kind of a good analogy for how I would imagine it would be. So, you know more about this than I do, Chris. So.
Indeed I do. Of course I do, but I don't know about that specific drug. I have not found a drug that actually makes the container. Well, no, I take that back. I was going to say.
Oh,
the,
boy.
you could say LSD would definitely make the container it in, came in, like, crawl and distort like that. But not like, I mean, she was having sort of like holodeck hallucinations.
Yeah.
That stuff was pretty powerful. And I like the fact that, like, you know, everybody would look at her and go, oh, man, you are high. I could tell you're high right now. And in this future world, though, it wasn't like something to be like, you know, I mean, you're going to be court-martialed. You know, that's usually what that means. And here, her superiors were just sort of like, tisk, tisk, tisk. Nah, well, maybe that might not be a good idea, but, you know, what can I do? So it's got that, it definitely has that frontier lawlessness. You're just on the edge of, even the law is on the edge of lawlessness.
Yeah, well, they put up with it, you know, because of where they are. You know, normally you get the idea that if this was anyplace else, she'd be, you know, they wouldn't tolerate it at all, but it's Mars and it sucks.
Yeah. It's Mars and it sucks, and she's good in a gunfight, so.
Mm-hmm. They kind of look the other way.
Although, I sort of get the idea that there probably wasn't too much trouble on Mars up until this point.
Apparently, it's pretty boring.
You know, it seems like a sort of mining old west mining town dynamic or something, where you have all the people who are there terraforming it or doing whatever they're doing on Mars, and probably getting paid a lot of money because it's a shitty job. And the only thing they can do is go out Friday night and, you know, go out on the town and drinking in a whoring. And so you get some drunk tank trouble and stuff like that, or people stealing miner stuff, but, you know, not
stealing miner stuff, miner
no
mining
way.
Stuff. Sorry, you walked into that one.
I sure did. But yeah, you know, just sort of, you know, yeah, local cop drunk tank stuff. Although they were pretty paramilitary looking and seemed, and they were definitely well trained, because they did hold off a horde of angry mutant zombies.
Yeah, but there's got to be some nasty criminal element, because they all knew who Desolation Williams was, and he was this legendary, you know, criminal too. So, and they were sending this whole squad to escort one guy. So obviously there was a good criminal element.
That's
here.
True. And before I forget, I also want to mention that the scene... Did you guys notice the one scene where the guy took the rod and stuck it through his cheek? And it popped up through the top of his cheek and made just the tiniest little noise. It was one of the best gore sound effects I've ever heard. It was so disturbing.
I can't remember that.
It was right before the shit hits the fan, and they show one of the Martians taking it looks like a knitting needle, and putting it up through his cheek, and it's coming out sort of through the top of his, you know, forehead, through the layers of skin, and the needle just sort of pops out, and there's just this little... I was watching it with headphones, so maybe that's why I heard it. But it was the grossest thing. Just this little, like, pop of it coming out. And I was just like, it's those touches like that. That popped in my head, and I didn't want to forget it.
No, sound design will win the day, you know, any chance it gets if you get good sound design. So.
Especially with a limited budget, which it looked like they had here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, I'd mentioned earlier that K&B Effects, they were known for working on a tight budget and delivering just some gruesome stuff. The movie that's often pointed to as kind of their piece de resistance is the first Wishmaster. There's a sequence in Wishmaster where it's just the entire dinner party, everything goes to hell, and, you know, people are being ripped apart and turned into monsters and turned inside out. We don't get anything quite at that level here, but everything we do get is pretty gruesome.
Yeah,
and it's pretty effective. So I, anytime you see, you know, K&B Effects, which is very creatively named for the last names of the three dudes who run it, anytime you see them on the credits, you know you're in for a treat from an effects and gore standpoint.
I love the words treat and gore together in a sentence.
You know, well, it's funny, talking about gore, which makes me think of towards the end of the film, in a lot of ways this is exactly like Escape from L.A., because it's like, uh-oh, we got about 10 minutes left. We gotta get rid of this cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's time to mow the cast down and wrap it.
Well, they establish right at the beginning, the train comes in with one person on it, so you're like, and then when it goes into flashback, it's like, well, none of these people are making it onto the train, you know? And then you're right, towards the end of the movie, you're like, man, there's a lot of people alive where they're, can't be for long. There's got to be a lot of bodies stacking up here pretty soon.
Yeah. At least they don't get taken out like in Escape from L.A. where it's like everyone's in the back of the chopper and they're dead. You know?
Yeah.
Blow it up neat and clean. Yeah, and the first time I watched this, I thought maybe it might have been a weakness of the movie that the editing style was the way it is. That maybe it was an attempt to put together the movie with scenes that they couldn't afford to do or that they got cut out or things that got changed. But now I'm not so sure. I think he was just trying to do a simple, cheap movie that was, you know, sort of old school, relying on story and the storytelling aspect of it. You know, it's all this whole movie is basically people telling their stories. And you'll notice sometimes when she's telling her story to the group of ladies, you know, the council or whatever, her superiors, that sometimes it doesn't quite match up with the reality. And they just sort of blankly, she'll say blah 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 blah, and then you'll see it play out on the screen. And or when Ice Cube is, I keep wanting to call him Ice T, when Ice Cube is telling his story, and you know, he's like, well, the money and this, and then you see the reality of it, and it's like, okay, he totally grabbed the money, you know.
Yeah, it's I mean, this thing bombed in the theater, like hardcore bombed. But I mean, not that Carpenter's movies have made, you know, $100 million anyway, but I don't know, some people might think of it as a slighter piece of his oeuvre, but I don't know, I think as an action adventure suspense movie, it's pretty decent.
It's from another time period, you know. It's not. It's a little bit out of touch with the movies coming out at the time, and I don't remember it even playing on a movie screen here in Rochester. You know,
I saw it in the theater in the suburbs of Boston.
You were probably lucky to, you know.
I was one of three people in the theater, and let me just say, by the time the credits rolled, I was the only one in the theater.
Oh, really? That is sad. I mean, even if you didn't like that sort of stuff, it's not a bad, it's not a walk-out bad movie.
Yeah.
No.
I've seen some walk-out bad movies that I didn't walk out of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
And it's not a boring movie either. It's not a, Jesus Christ, there's nothing going on here, you know?
It's too short to get boring. It's only 90 minutes.
And it's 90 minutes of stuff happening all 90 minutes, you know? It moves from set piece to set piece to set piece. It never really stops.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't get that, but I saw this on video, and I thought it was a decent little movie, and my opinion's only grown since I watched it again for this show. So I would totally recommend this to anyone who's listening to this show. If they would be on board to watch it because it'd be right in their wheelhouse. It's got, you know, action and violence and gunplay and science fiction and Natasha Henstridge and, you know, Pam Grier.
Robert Carradine.
Robert Carradine.
Oh, man.
This is Fat Baldwin, you know.
Oh, well, I mean, look, the world graced us with Fat Baldwin and vampires.
Well, I mean, this would have been Fat Baldwin in space. How about that, you know?
Oh, man. That would have been so cool.
Fat Baldwin in space. I don't know. I think John Carpenter knows that he operates. I think he consciously or unconsciously doesn't want to ever, you know, be a huge, successful blockbuster movie maker. I think he maybe subverts himself, and that might end up in the long term working out for the better as far as his movies go.
Yeah. Well, he knows if he's getting a $100 million budget, he's going to have zero control over the final
product.
He's going
to have people up his ass all the time and come out with something that's not what he wants. So, you know, and the same with his new, you know, his latest movie, the Ward. It's another low budget movie, but he obviously was able to do his thing with it.
And we shall get to that one soon. Eventually.
What should we get to next? What should be our? What do we got left?
Well, we've only got three films left, not counting The Ward, because I think that was going to be kind of a special edition. But I think the next one we should go to, because my thought was to do the two 70s films last, two remaining 70s films. So the next film is Starman.
Oh, that means we gotta make sure Scott Gardner makes it for that one, because he wants to be on Starman. And
And for those that don't know, evidently Scott really wanted to be on our episode for They Live. And when he wasn't on it, he has thus been boycotting our show, despite the fact that it's on his podcast network. So
yeah.
He's not boy.
You'll notice if you go to the Facebook page, it's not listed under the the list of podcasts under the Two True Freaks feed.
Oh, that's my fault. I gotta put that on. It should be that.
Shh, what are you doing? Blame it on Scott. Come on. This is good drama.
Yeah, you're right.
I went on the forum. I said something is like, I said, well, you know, my natural position is to be the guy who seems to have done his research. And he goes, what are you talking about? I go, don't you listen to the Vault show? And his response was, I don't listen to that stupid show since you guys. I'm like, okay.
Well, it's like, don't be mad at me, man. I don't run this thing. I just breathe heavily into the mic for 90 minutes.
I honestly, I you know, believe it or not, I honestly had no idea that he wanted anything to do with that show. I know he liked that movie, but I didn't know it was something he was interested in joining us for. He may have even articulated it once or twice, but Scott knows how my memory is, and God knows his memory is even worse. So, no way we're gonna not have him on the Starman show. So,
yep, and he apparently he's a big fan of Starman, so that should be.
Oh yes,
a good episode.
Well, he and I saw Starman in the theater several times together. So, yeah, we were big Starman fans. I think I dragged him to that because I was the John Carpenter fan, and I don't know. We'll find out when we get him here. His memory may be better. I doubt.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
Plus, we'll get to pick on him too for hating on the show.
Yeah,
I say we kill him with kindness.
Of course, that's what we do here on the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror.
Yes, we're fun
with the emphasis on
kill.
Do you ever find yourself going to Amazon.com and buying some record or movie or some stupid thing that Two True Freaks have been talking about so that you can catch up on it or you've been reminded of it or something? Well, now, how about this? Instead of going to Amazon.com, go to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com and follow our link to Amazon.com. When you do that, if you buy something over at Amazon, we get a little cut out of it. Which is awesome because we love money and it won't cost you a thing.
Did you know? You can sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. That's right. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today. visit our website at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Libsyn is spelled LIBSYN.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com, where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook too. My name is spelled S-C-O-T-T-G-A-R-D-N-E-R.
You can friend me on Facebook too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.